Welcome back, new you maniacs, to the Spinner Rack here at Season 4 of the Marvel New Universe Comics Podcast, the voice of the new, now universe.
Nobody's going to know what the hell we're talking about.
Please see our previous 5 episodes if you want to know. And we're your hosts.
Andy, talking about actual comic books, Cyforce number 23, and...
Steven with Universe News and various extras. In 1986, the New Universe was launched as an imprint for Marvel Comics dedicated to a more grounded and less fantastic approach to comics and world building. The original idea was the world outside your window with real-time progress and greater realism. After the first year, some books were canceled, although we see their characters in other places, and the remaining books have gotten consistent creative teams, their origins were streamlined, and they are becoming more action-oriented as the new universe becomes increasingly militarized in the wake of the world-shaking disaster, The Pit. Since then, we have seen the U.S. government drafting paranormals and possibly gearing up for a war, and we were calling it the new universe up till a few months ago when it was the new universe. And we had a discussion last month about calling it instead the now universe. So
yeah,
we'll just keep adding.
I guess you liked that idea better than I did.
Keeps showing up back in my script, even though someone keeps X-ing it out each week. I don't understand.
Well, I guess I could edit the script like right before you start talking.
With our podcast, you can follow along with us each week as we go through each comic in the order they hit the spinner rack, or just check out individual comics if you already have a favorite. We have a Season 4 trivia challenge now available over at our website, kickersinc.com. Please go and check out our, gallery of characters, etc., etc. And over on X, formerly known as Twitter, you can find us at Kickers Inc. for updates on our schedule.
We will this occasionally week... track Taylor Swift's airplane, too. So,
what? Madness.
He's got to get those hits.
This week, we get back to Cyforce. A group of psychic teenage paranormal runaways bound together by a psychic entity called the Psyhawk, who we haven't seen in 6 issues. Now split up and on the run from both sides of the Cold War. If they can't elude the draft by hiding in Canada, are they going to cut it in the army?
We will find out. So this week, Cyforce number 23, Wayne, Lindsay, and Tyrone risk everything to free their teammate, Thomas Boyd, from a paramilitary base. Isn't it just a military base? Paranormal?
Yeah, paramilitary makes it sound like it's a like non-governmental agency or something.
Yeah, like a bunch of dudes in Idaho or something. But
yeah, it's like my weekends, not like... I mean, ixnay. On we
right.
go.
Right. Definitely not starting a survivalist cult.
Not wearing yes. Camo as we speak. No.
Cyforce 23. Wayne, Lindsay, and Tyrone risk everything to free their teammate, Thomas Boyd, from a paramilitary base. But the question is, does Thomas want to be freed? Ooh. Mm-hmm. Part 1 of a special crossover with DP723. written by Fabian Nicieza and illustrated by Graham Nolan. New artist.
I believe we've unfortunately reached the end of Ron Lim's work on the title. We will also be discussing the bonus features. Probably we'll be looking mostly at the the official handbook pages. We've got a letters page and a couple of ads. We'll probably save the universe news for next week.
Yeah, who is the DC version, right?
Yeah, my bad. That's what I always liked that title a little bit more, I'm afraid.
There are some nice saucy letters in this one, though. But yeah, Cyforce 23, September 1988, likely hit the stores May 24th, 1988. And I think it's probably one of Steven's favorite covers. Keeps making a
The
big deal out of it because it looks like a bunch of shirtless guys doing a dance battle.
it's like a scene from Electric Break into Electric Boogaloo with the
I think
Turbo and Ozone ready to
it
dan do a dance off with the other guys.
I think if it wasn't Thomas Boyd, because you've got him kind of like in the middle, and he's both got like one jazz hand, one fist, and he's smiling, right? So I think if it wasn't smiling, like it might not scream dance, I guess, as much. You've got like the arches of muscle with like Mastodon and Pitbull all both kind of like squaring off in the same pose looking at them. So, but yeah, Psi-Force versus DP7 boot camp brawl. So, not dance camp brawl. That would have been a good issue too, I suppose.
Would have loved it. Oh my
Yeah,
gosh.
it's a pretty fun cover. And it's a Paul Ryan cover. So,
Paul Ryan, yes. Really
the man stays
can't
busy.
complain.
So yeah, I guess we'd finally kind of gotten to the point where Wayne, Tyrone, and Lindsay had decided that they can't just hide in Canada fighting off the occasional madman in the Spitfire armor. They need to go rescue Thomas first, and then try and get Stassi and Kathy back as well, and then reunite the old gang of Psi-Force, and that's kind of what's been leading up to this issue.
Yeah, putting the gang back together.
Yeah,
That's the one.
but yeah, interesting enough, we do have a new penciler. I wasn't familiar with the name, so I looked him up a little bit. Interestingly enough, his Wikipedia credit does not include Psi-Force, so. What up, Wikipedia? Can we somebody go edit that? Though he did also so do like newspaper cartoon work and was the artist on Rex Morgan MD for a piece. Not too many people can claim that one. But it looked like a lot of DC Comics work, a lot of Batman of various series and some detective comics and such, so.
I know I didn't remember if I looked him up or someone else this week, and I would be confusing the two. So, DC and interesting. Yeah, the Daily comic strips, really some of them do have a really high tradition of, really nice art.
Yeah.
Rex
So
Morgan was always a little kind of in the middle, but if I recall that period correctly, that was, that was good, solid draftsmanship. There's never anything exciting in Rex Morgan, so it's not like you have an action scene that would mean anything. So,
right. That's a pretty solid contemplative look coming out of Rex, though. So.
Exactly.
But yeah, I thought it was interesting. They do mention him in the end and the letters page as going to eventually become the regular artist, but given his lack of credit on Wikipedia, I wonder if that actually ended up happening or if he just got a steady job somewhere else and bounced. But we'll find out. I didn't peek ahead, so. But anyway, issue starts big cover page. With a Grain of Salt is apparently the real title here. We're in April 4th, 1988, in comic book time, back at Fort Benning, which has been the site of the draft comic and a lot of our books up until now.
By the
They're having
way,
some kind of
the
oh, go ahead.
title with a grain of salt, there was a it's famous in Latin, cum grano salis or something.
You going all Rex Morgan on me with your Latin medical terminology or something?
Yeah, but I was amused when I
Oh,
looked it up that it's actually like not from ancient Latin. It's like from modern Latin. So like it was a phrase in English that they just translated into Latin in like after the Renaissance. So it doesn't go all the way back. It's just weird to me that I always thought it was like an old Roman, guys were always talking about salt. I don't know why. Anyway.
This is what happens when Lenore from DP7 is like putting her students to sleep with all this really fascinating history. But it's a Latin phrase, but it's not old Latin like you'd think it was. It's really modern Latin. Oh, okay. Can I
Okay.
talk about the guys trying to punch each other?
Oh,
Can I talk about the
okay.
punching?
Go ahead.
Oh. Yeah. Apparently, they're having some sort of army battle royale where everybody just gets to fight each other. Sadly, we don't get the whole tournament bracket. But it's like Thomas Boyd is advanced to the second round by defeating Jeffrey Walters. And like, come on, show us him fighting the speed guy and how in the world he defeats that. That's interesting. But it's basically like Pitbull is huge. He's got an eye patch. He's kind of grizzly. He's taking a big swing, and Thomas is like dodging, jumping away from him while like touching him on the arm, presumably just like wearing him down slowly, stealing energy a little bit at a time. And then all the other army guys, the characters from the draft and our DP7 regulars, occasionally with the wrong hair coloring, are all, kind of standing around cheering him on. Go, Thomas, go. So yeah, Thomas is, landing hits, frustrating the crap out of Pitbull, who then charges towards a guy named Anderson, which had we ever seen him before?
I don't believe so.
Don't think
R
so.
Richie Anderson is
Yeah.
the is a guy in with glasses, and I don't remember him ever popping up before. So
Yeah, I think they imply him later to be like a little bit higher rank or something, but he just kind of comes out of nowhere. But he's like, Pitbull's like, look, looks like I need some help, and you're the lucky winner. So he charges into the crowd, grabs Anderson, and starts swinging him around like a club,
that's
trying to hit Boyd.
this is what you
Until
do in D&D if you have like 18,000 strength and you're like
I guess the
trying to brush off
halfling
some.
all of a sudden becomes a weapon. Until like he gets stopped, he gets interrupted, and he like tapped on the shoulders by a very serious but also perhaps a little strange looking Landers, Dave Landers, Mastodon.
Dave is a little off model in this issue, but I mean, it's also that he's like fresh haircut and shaven,
Yeah,
so.
which definitely makes him look weird. They're actually from a distance in the bottom of page three, the little shot of him in the military garb looks exactly like the military guy from Seinfeld that like Elaine hired out of the mailroom to write the catalog. If you get the Seinfeld reference, like it's pretty good, other than the fact that he's way more beefy.
Yeah, it's a little larger scale, but yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, that guy didn't have his hair either.
It's hard keeping your feet dry when you're kicking in the skull. Anyway, well, Haldeman interrupts. He's like, "What kind of stupid stunt was that, soldier? You're here to learn how to become part of a fighting unit. You don't treat your squad members like dirt. You understand, Private?" And Pitbull's been kind of tamed. Like he in fact, does listen. But also, Haldeman has that weird, make you have existential dread paranormal ability, so he might be a little wary of that getting used on him again.
Yeah, Pitbull's been tamed by the power of German romanticism from 19th century literature, but
Yeah. So we get like a last narration, which I assume is from Haldeman. It's like, so what it boils down to, these two are my best fighters. What happens when they reach their breaking points? Report concluded. So that was the only bit of the report we got anyway. So it cuts to Tyrone flying around in his ghost form again, like since Psi-Force broke up with that big Rotzfau explosion, he has not been attached to his body, and he now has like supreme powers to make himself, more visible, like look like a normal person, and also whatever the heck else, electrical zappy powers, all sorts of stuff.
It's not worrying at all that he's lost contact with his physical body and is ascending into some sort of godlike super being status.
Yeah, but he's basically zipping around Fort Benning, flying through buildings, casing the joint. He says, "Nothing the government has done since we got these parabilities has exactly led us to trust them. But what if we go to war in the Middle East? They claimed responsibility for the Pittsburgh explosion. We haven't hit back at them yet." Right. So again, I haven't read the war. I don't know who is the other side of the war. I'm kind of assuming it might be Russia at this point, but maybe that's only a Sci-Force-y kind of plot point. So.
There've been a couple of things of I want to say Libyans taking credit for it or something,
Yeah, that's what we had heard before,
but I don't.
but anyway, Tyrone flies in on Wayne and Lindsay hanging out in the front seat of a pickup truck, making out basically. He interrupts. He interrupts them, kind of, scares them on purpose, I suppose. He's like, "Let me tell you what we're getting ourselves into: an entire army base, barracks, airplane runways, security towers, exercise grounds, all for training paranormals like us to fight." And Wayne's like, "Sounds like Boyd's kind of place." And they're saying, "I was thinking the same thing. What if he doesn't want to be rescued?" And Lindsay's got like even more supremely 80s looking hair now, I guess. Super
She
spiky.
is, yeah. She did. What was the girl's magazine? 17 or something? Like,
Yeah.
she's very trendy for a 1988.
She also kind of looks 35 in this. Right, like she's working at the makeup counter or something, but
Keep in mind the like Canon Films version of this that's always playing in my head. Yeah, all the actors are like in their 30s. Hey. You ready for a gym class later?
yeah. Well, like Tyrone on the cover looks like Obama or something. It looks like an older guy is like yelling.
If he
So,
had a tie, yeah, he would be perfect for that.
yeah, a tan
Anyway.
suit or something. So they're kind of like recapping, back of the action, how they were confronted by Medusa Webb in Seattle, how they fought the Spitfire, well, the Max armor, with, oh crap, what was the guy's name?
Jake Travis.
Jake Travis, yes, with his lost alter ego slash Hannigan, which apparently we all forgot about. And yeah, so like, well, I can't see him ignoring us if we really needed him. I mean, we sort of saved his life, right? Right. Call back to the annual where he actually joined the team because he was being hunted by this, I guess, the CIA hit goon squad that had been using him in the past to try and fight them. So yeah, it's like, do we really need him? Yes. He's the only one that actually knows how to fight, right? Jeez, that sounds sick, if you know what I mean. He's like, fine. Thomas Boyd, we go in and get him, whether he wants us or not. And then we segue to Russia. You want
Oh,
to
here
take
we
these pages?
go. The Siberian Project, a Soviet scientific institute for paranormal research, and they draw kind of a looks like a prison block, maybe a Cobra Commander kind of a
Yeah,
thing,
it's
but
very like video game based that you would have to break into and maybe play two levels in.
and it's of course like in the middle of a glacier or something, so I don't think yeah they play up the Siberia bit. Anyway, we have our old friend Serge Vladimirov, the guy who hates Indians.
Yes.
And
Or at least wants to kill all of them,
oh
maybe.
right, and he is being taken for a tour by the new leader of the project, Comrade Shepalev. I'm directed to oversee the rehabilitation of Krasnaya Soletsi, following the rather grueling assistance in the Afghan affair. I assure you, Comrade Vladimirov, your supervisors have nothing to worry about. Our operatives are merely exhausted. And they ask about he asks about a boy, but they say he is nothing to worry about either. He's just psychologically unstable or something. A little vague on one of the characters, but
Presumably some kind of foreshadowing.
yeah. So there's a woman at some like monitoring station. Comrade Zotov, what a surprise. He asks her about how these members are doing. So I had to look it up a little bit, and apparently it's Krasnaya Solyetsi, should be something more like Krasnaya Solnitsi, which is Red Sun, I think. Not
Okay.
Red Dawn, Red Sun.
All right.
Okay. And then so yeah, I ended up having to try to look up some of these words. Not super informative, but yeah, we've got another like group of paranormals. All of their code names are in Russian, so let's take a stab at Kojichesku, field leader. She bears the responsibilities of someone's failure, but it's only fueling her passion to succeed. And her ability to create psionic cubes of force has increased diametrically. Oh, okay. It's like a woman sort of with mentally manipulating a green cube.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to figure out. Like, is she lifting the cube or is she creating the cube?
I mean, it from this, I'm thinking it's like Indigo's like force fist or
Yeah.
something. So like a force cube, yeah.
Looks like she's kind of struggling with it more, though, you know? So,
Yeah, she
who
could also
knows
be
what that would
pushing
look
it
like.
away, that it's just a thing, but Slatochka continues to improve, bitterly opposed to our entire program. Only the threat to his family keeps him under our control.
Oh, that should
Hey,
work out great.
yeah, he can cause things to blow up, apparently. You see, someone in is like more animal than human. The injuries sustained by Shivotnoye have healed completely. Her strength continues to grow as her bestial nature rises to the fore.
So it is, in fact, a topless lady, apparently.
Ew. This is like the least erotic thing ever.
Some kind of like yak-faced thing or something. I don't know. I'm not sure what animal that's most similar to, with the really big long horns and orange
Yeah.
skin.
And then Devon, indeed. Well, Sergey, you're the one who gave us an autistic paranormal child. Don't blame us if we can't make him what you want. And we've got a kid in straight jacket, and like even his head and face are bound up in a padded cell. So someone that's autistic, so is having trouble doing what they want or doing what they expect. So the so Serge and his friends are, so what about Rodstvo? Well, we actually don't know where he is. See, after extensive use of his powers, he prefers to recuperate on his own. He believe he has a private cabin in the Chersky Mountains, but we haven't asked, and we're not going to. So we presumably, I didn't look up the Chersky Mountains. We see a cabin in a hillside. And a door opens, Rodstvo steps out, and he sort of walks into the sky. And I was thinking, I was a little unclear whether he was sort of exploding the cabin or just underneath himself. What do you think?
I can't imagine he would destroy his cabin, right? Because he needs that.
Yeah,
So,
it seemed like that. Oh, yeah, my vacation home. Oh, yeah. I'm not going to prove anything by blowing that up. Yeah, because it's like he's walked away a short distance, and then the sort of explosion line are directly below him, and then he's just sort of laughing maniacally.
he kind of looks like he's just like flicking his finger or something, and then a boom. But we actually get some more details about how he works in the handbook stuff in the end, which is helpful. So
Oh, great.
anyway, back to the red-blooded non-Siberian American countrymen, right? None of these Russian kooks.
I will work on my pronunciation for these guys.
I mean, it's you saved my butt, so.
Everything is like difficult enough, like if it's not in its original Cyrillic alphabet,
Yeah.
like it looks weird, weird as heck. Anyway, on we
Cute
go.
lady, splody guy. Yeah.
Animal woman, woman, yeah.
Animal woman. I like animal woman. That's a good one. If you can have animal man, right?
This is true.
Anyway, so like back at we cut back to Fort Benning. The guys are playing cards and stuff. This Richie Anderson kind of shows up again. And he goes to kind of thank Thomas for saving him, but Thomas just kind of flies off the handle and like grabs him and says, "Listen to me, Corporal. I didn't save you. It was Landers, you understand. I'm looking out for my own skin around here. I'm not responsible for anyone else again." And I guess that's kind of like from last issue, where Night Mask Keith Remsen kind of got in his head and perhaps cured him of caring. In probably what is still his best psychological work of the series so far. Because now he thinks that all of his friends are dead, and he's got really no reason to do anything, right, other than be angry and fight. Landers, Mastodon, though, kind of defuses the situation by rolling him up in his mattress. He's like, "Calm down, Corporal's just being friendly. Why don't you just say you're sorry?" And he's like, "Sorry." He's like, "Good. I don't know what your problem is, Boyd, but this anger you have eating away inside of you is gonna get you killed." And Boyd says, "What if it does? It's not your problem." And there's
Yeah.
a
He's
stare, which
David Landers, the Prince of Peace.
he's been kind of chill in this episode, though.
Yeah.
It's that woodsman mentality, just want to be one with nature, maybe occasionally kill some rabbits. Landers' hair color changes a couple times, or it's black again, maybe. But he says, "We're all in this together." He's like, "Forget it, Landers. Watch your back, big guy. This isn't over between us." Like, I don't know why you would pick a fight with Landers, but not the brightest move. So then we cut to 12:30 a.m., right? So just after midnight, and the red truck that the remainder of Psi-Force is in kind of pulls up to the compound. I mean, I guess security's not that tight if you can just park within viewing distance of it and walk in. But also they have cool psychic powers. So it's like, "All right, let me handle the guards like we planned. We make our third right in park, just like Ty said." So they basically drive up to the gate, pretending to be a supply truck, which isn't going to make much sense. He makes a joke that if the boys don't get their deodorant, it's going to smell around here. But then, Wayne has the psychic power to control people's minds, so he just basically pushes both the guards around to sleep and gives a scan to see who else is out there. He says says he's hit, which I assume means like knocked out, six or seven people. "I've only hit about six or seven people still awake. Everyone else is sleeping." Okay, so he
To say
scanned.
he just scanned that there was that many wake people. He didn't
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm butchering that one. And two guards come up from behind, but he knocks them out pretty quickly, and then they do the old swap the clothes thing with the guards.
that Lindsay getting into the I'll be darned.
Yeah, got a little underwear shot there. And Tyrone turns himself into regular looking Tyrone. So like usually he's kind of ghostly looking, but you can see him. But at some point, for plot reasons, maybe he gained the power to kind of bring his color back and just look like a regular person again.
So yeah, he's able to make himself look like his physical body, but wouldn't you want him to be have his physical body dressed in a uniform at this
Right, that's what
point?
I thought, yeah.
He's just in jeans and a t-shirt here, apparently. So
Yeah.
okay.
Maybe that's the easiest thing to imagine. I don't know. Camouflage is tricky. It's a bunch of different color patterns. Why even bother and just be invisible and float 30 feet up? And
He
I
sa he says, "I hate doing
don't
this. It takes a lot out of me," which is
know.
always like, "Oh, I used up all my energy making myself look normal,
Yeah.
and then I couldn't fly you out of there." I guess I don't know, but.
Well, they sneak into the barracks. Tyrone knows where Thomas is, and so they kind of surprise him. He's on the top bunk, and either Jeff Walters is on the bottom bunk, or he just kind of wakes up as they walk past. But they're like, "Hey, Boyd, being all you can be." Like, and I think I missed this first come around, but Wayne gives him a come outside, and it's got the little special jaggy things on the word balloon, so he actually does mentally push him to come out.
Oh, right. Yeah, I didn't notice that, but yeah, that's probably what he's doing.
So
So
they
he
all
doesn't
walk,
argue with them then.
right? They all walk out. Jeff noticed them, but Thomas almost basically just starts yelling. So, but he's like, "Tucker, Jessup, you're alive!" Like, he's like, "We're here to spring you. We got to rescue Stoss and Kathy." Like, "Stassi, she's dead. They're both dead." And Lindsay says, "They're alive. We have to leave quickly." He's like, "You pushed me, didn't you, Tucker? Now you're lying to get me to come with you. They're dead. Stassi's dead because of me. They're dead. You got it?" And so he's
I'm
freaking
gonna stick this fist into my mouth at this point.
out. It does look like an angry 40-year-old a little bit,
It's
but.
yeah, that he's a little more caricatured when he gets angry, so.
Yeah. We see, like, in the window, Jeff Walters, peeping at them, saying, "What's going on out there?" And Wayne, with some sort of strange Wolverine hair, is like, "You've been lied to. We trust our sources more than you can, that more than you can trust yours. They're alive. I could push you to come with us, Boyd, but it's got to be your decision. You're going to turn your back on the chance, no matter how slim, that they're still alive? Gonna spend the rest of your life wondering about the choice you made." At this point, Jeff takes the time to come out, saying, asking what's going on. Again, Thomas just yells at everybody. He's like, "This doesn't concern you. Go back to sleep." and Jeff, he's closest to Tyrone and kind of looks like he's going to put his hand on his back, but it goes through him, right? Because Tyrone is intangible ghost form. And that's apparently enough for Thomas Boyd to freak out and tackle Jeff through the door. So he's really lost it. Which then, of course, wakes up the entire army barracks. And Pitbull comes out saying, "What are you doing to my pal Jeff?" So, I mean, maybe Jeff made an impression when he saved him from blowout the
I like that line a lot. It's
other day.
who does it remind me of now?
Yeah. So, I mean, this book has every character in it, right? I mean, the Fort Benning's got like Chris and Garth from the draft, right? Sergeant Haldeman, though he's not here in the barrack. That Richie Anderson, the new guy. You got Pitbull, Jeff Walters, Landers. Hey, we don't really see Randy, but he would be there, presumably. And Bazooka from
Bazooka.
DP7, who's got like fist force blasts, right? Just adding to the beefcake of the situation because he's also massive. In this case, drawn almost as big as Pitbull and Landers, so that's probably not quite right. So yeah, there's like a quick throwdown. Tyrone, knocks out Pitbull with however he does when he kind of phases through things and kind of zaps them. Thomas starts throwing people around and like, "Let's get out of here." But they get interrupted by Garth, who's got that weird tube power. So he creates these tubes of force, like this weird pattern, kind of blocking the door. So like.
I didn't really realize they were unbreakable, which is what he seems to be tubes of pure force. You can't go anywhere, Thomas.
There's too much at stake here. Like, what's at stake? You don't even know what's going on. You just woke up.
Go back to bed, gridlock.
Maybe it's a bluff and they're actually like foam. They're really easy to break. There's no way he'll be able to stop these. No, don't try to stop them. Don't try and break them.
The draft, he like built like a little Lego like set, and it was like, oh, can you imagine if we'd had these kind of powers at the Dom?
Right. So at this point, Lindsay had run away. So she just leaves. She's like, that guy was so big. I can't help but fight against something like that. It's like I forced him into this and then I run away. I'm so useless. But she finds the administration building and decides to go a stealing. Why not? And Wayne, who has incredibly useful powers that could perhaps shut down the entire fight, goes chasing after his girlfriend and kind of leaving Tyrone and Thomas to fight off all of the paranormals by themselves, basically. But it's funny, she basically starts taking objects because she has these vague powers where if she touches something owned by someone, she can kind of see their past and perhaps what they're doing now. And then maybe the future.
I still haven't seen her see the future, so I don't know, but
Yeah.
that was suggested at one point. I'd missed the first time around. This is she's going into Remsen's office.
Oh yeah, then catch that. Ramson's got a big flag. So yeah, she grabs stuff from him. She grabs like nasal spray from the Bloodhound Zentner. I call Smellhound. Maybe those kind of things will end up being interesting later. And like a picture from Haldeman. We cut back to the fight, and I don't know. Thomas is like ridiculously good now. He's like doing these acrobatic jump kicks to some random guy's head as he kind of dives over the top of Mastodon, dodging him. Tyrone's basically can just stand there because nothing can hurt him. And if Mastodon's punch swings through him and it just like electrocutes his hand almost, kind of zaps him. We get an out of my way Barrett.
Chris
Chris,
Barrett,
okay.
metallurgist,
Yeah.
metallurgist.
So he clearly did not have time to get his hubcap out, otherwise, he could have made short work of these guys. But eventually it just kind of ends with Thomas Boyd just diving through a window, right? Just breaking right through the window unharmed, where all two of the guards eventually have finally woken up apparently and start shooting at them. So yeah, basically they run off trying to get away. Something explodes. I'm not really sure like what the source of that is. Maybe it's Tyrone
I'm gonna
causes
say
it.
Tyrone like went through an engine or something.
Right. Not sure how that works, but I guess if you have like electrical or energy or light powers, you could ignite a gas tank or something
Yeah,
ish.
something like that.
Right. But they stop at their truck, right? Their getaway vehicle, but notice that Wayne and Lindsay aren't there. So they've gotten away to a degree, but they got to get the rest of their crew. So they're still kind of running through the base like an action movie, getting shot at, and Thomas is apparently super invincible. Jeff, right, super speed, starts chasing after him. He's kind of like zigzagging through the guards, perhaps to stop them from killing those people. Because it's interesting, because the guards don't really know what was going on, but they are shooting at one of their own privates. If we think about this.
It's hard to say whether these guards know that these people have powers and such. I guess because they're pretty fast on the draw with guys who don't obviously have weapons in their hands, you know what I mean?
Yeah, right.
And who are it's like there's our other recruits. Some of them are fighting each other. Let's just start shooting at all of them. Yeah, I don't know if that's the right plan.
They've been trained by Mac Browning, I guess. Like that guy's
Yeah.
not wearing his army uniform. He looks an awful lot like a civilian. And that just could be a flying ghost civilian. Like, better safe than sorry. Shoot first. But like Wayne and Lindsay run into a squad of guards too, but they're basically quickly taken out by Tyrone flying through them with his godlike light, electricity, whatever we want them to be powers. And they're just about to zip off to safety where we get a until we get a blam, and someone has fired a bullet through Thomas's leg. Ouch. So not invincible after all. And does Zeus have kind of like a weird art to it where it's like his leg is gray?
It's
Is
I'm
that
not sure if
smoke?
that's like a coloring thing or because it's like too much to have been blood that but got like, you know, we can't have this big pile of blood on in the comic, but it
Yeah.
ends up looking like he's stuck under the blanket or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just an odd little side bit. And who has shot him? Good old Richie. It turns out the
Didn't
character
see
that we've
that
never met
coming.
before is a bad guy or
The
something. Oh man.
thing that's I didn't understand about this either is that like he's shot him like okay he's a sniper or something, but he's supposed to he's like in the paranormal brigade here. I thought, you know, he must have some
Yeah.
power to be a sniper. Yeah, we don't get anything out of like how that how he fits into the larger picture. Maybe later, I don't know.
Yeah, it's certainly pretty random. So yeah, after a bit of tense staring at each other, this Richie Anderson and Thomas Boyd, Thomas jumps at him like he's never been shot in the first place. Gives him one good punch in the face. Says, "Sorry about this, Richie. I can't let you stop me. This is my last chance." I'm like, "What are you apologizing for? He just shot you." But okay. And then he gets clobbered by this a speedy Jeff Walters. Says, "You're not going anywhere, Boyd. You just assaulted a superior in the line of duty, as well as breaking every regulation in the book."
He's a corporal. That's anyway.
Every regulation.
I don't know. Jeff's awfully eager to make him play by the book and all that for our old DP7 buddy Jeff. I'm
Yeah.
not sure that sounds like his character, but go ahead.
Then Wayne gives him the Jack Nicholson regulations, regulations. I'll tell you about regulations.
You can't handle the truth. I mean, the regulations.
Everything in this stinking country's done to us in the last 2 years is against the law. What do we care about army rules? Go back to your barracks and start seriously thinking about what this country's doing to paranormals.
I'm out of order. You're out of order. This whole army is out of order. Okay.
And I guess he mind zaps Jeff to go and think about what the country's doing to paranormals.
If you're going to think about this country and paranormals, think again.
Oh
I
God,
okay.
that turned out great last time.
Jeff's in a
Anyway,
coma for the next 5 issues.
so I mean, they pick up Thomas. Lindsay sort of introduces herself to him, sneaking past through the trucks again back to where their red pickup was hidden, and are shocked even to see that the key is not in the drive column, even though they're facing the wrong direction, that they wouldn't actually be able to see the key. Kind of funny.
It's hidden behind this is the steering column. You're right.
And then again, we get this sort of cinematic. Someone steps out of the shadows, looking for this, are we?
Yeah.
It's like
Landers.
David Landers took the key. Like, okay, the least sneaky guy ever. And I guess Pipple will be a little less sneaky. It's like, "We got some things to settle between us, Boyd." He's like, "Okay, Landers, let's do it." We're supposed to think they're going to square off and fight, but then he just tosses him the keys and smiles at him with his weird oblong shaped head. He says, "If there's one thing I understand, it's the need to escape." Go with your friends. Do what you have to do. Just don't drag the rest of us grunts into it. You got it, man. Let's get out of here.
You're pretty cool, Mr. Landers.
Not like those other guys, those other parents.
The other parents aren't cool like you.
Can you buy us some alcohol? He's like, you want to come with us? He's like, no thanks. Tried life on the run already. I hated it. I'm going to stick this out till I get a better idea of where I'm headed, even though the army captured me and forced me to join.
Still, they provide me with clothes that fit, which is more than
That's
anyone
something,
did
yeah.
before. And
Yeah. So well, everybody else kind of catches up to them, like yelling and screaming, like, who are these people? We need some answers. And Landis is just sitting there smiling, thinking to himself, good luck, kids. And then there's a rainbow and they drive off or something.
he looks so stupid here. I don't know.
That's not.
Good kids.
I'm kind of glad that's not the last panel, though, I guess, at least. Because they drive off. Tyrone blows up a guard tower or something for some reason. And nobody chases them, also, because, why bother? What now, Tucker? So we get that leg wound healed, which doesn't seem to be bothering you anyway. And, I take four Tylenols and we go up to DC and get the girls. Are you sure they're still alive? Absolutely. We get them and we start fighting back the way it looks like we were meant to as a team.
Yeah. Next issue.
Oh, reunited, but one will die.
Aww.
It's like Spitfire and the Troubleshooters PTSD all over again.
Ready for the death of a Psi-Forcer?
Yeah.
Die gonna die. So.
We do get a peek at the next issue's cover, which is a bunch of hands, six hands. So perhaps the
Yeah.
whole reunited squad plus one, holding the old Psy-Hawk amulet, which I thought they threw out and actually don't need. But.
Yeah, that's maybe it only showed up once or twice, but yeah, I also noticed there were six hands. I was like, what the heck? I don't know.
Yeah.
They've got let's see, Lindsay, Wayne, Thomas, Tyrone, Kathy, Stassi. Okay, that's since we've added Lindsay,
Yeah,
that
but we
makes
know
sense.
that makes the Psy-Hawk angry.
Right, that's also. Yeah, but at least Michael Crawley's not coming back. Or at least
That's
we
true.
don't think he is. Or maybe he'll come back and die.
We're the draft junior.
Honestly prefer that. I kind of like the current team. I don't
Yeah,
know. I feel like
anyway.
he is a kid. I don't know. Okay.
Lindsay can stay back and do
Anyway.
tech support. Anyway,
So
this is
he's.
kind of a weird issue. Like the first time I read it, I'm like, this is not very good. And then the second time I read it, I kind of warmed up to a little bit. And then reading through it now, I'm not sure I like it as much as the second time. Just like noticing more, everything's just a little bit off. And I mean, it's maybe just credit to Ron Lim because that's the only difference, right? Like the stories have been going pretty well. I've been enjoying it. But it's just that little bit of artistic difference. See, maybe threw off the mix just enough. I
Yeah, I see what you mean about like Lindsay
don't know.
being like a much. She's I'm not even sure she's even 18, and she does
Yeah.
not look like she's, yeah, a
Yeah.
kid. The and Landers is noticeably off model. I mean, I don't know if it's just like anyone taking over would kind of be like a disruption to our experience,
Yeah.
or it's going to take him an issue or two to warm into it.
Yeah. It's
I mean,
definitely
is it
not the easiest thing in the world to draw, like the difference between a teenager and an adult,
that's
but
true.
it's definitely a struggle here.
And I mean, I just I appreciate the costumes and are kind of a shortcut, and without being allowed to use that, everyone's in a uniform, in fact. It's noticeably difficult to establish differentiation, and I don't know. So I'm not going to say I dislike the artist, but I would say it's not. We had gotten used to like a better, something better there. So yeah.
Yeah, it's a little different, and that's a bit of a step down. One sec.
So I mean, it's a serviceable art. I don't know. It's also funny, the writing is a little, it should be the same. I'm not sure if Nicias's like I mean, he had co-written the draft, and yet the people from the draft in here don't do anything. He doesn't sort of build them up at all.
Yeah, I was kind of expecting something to happen with those guys, but
I've
I
got tubes of force. Okay, buddy, just settle down. Yeah, I mean,
didn't.
I don't want to be like this is a bummer, but it's definitely got several things sort of pushing forward. It keeps a lot of action going on, and it's all fairly, I mean, in the sort of within the realm of the characters we have that are always kind of getting into trouble.
Yeah.
But sort of it's not outlandish what they do, breaking in, how they sort of get the fight started. I'd say it's not like just Wayne putting everyone to sleep or something like that that you might want to sort of would make more a little more sense, but maybe not be
Yeah.
as exciting. I don't know.
Yeah, I think like I had kind of imagined this one in my head a little bit. It's like, Wayne is obviously going to be really powerful, but perhaps there's some characters that his power doesn't work on, right? Like Landers had that psychic protection. That would have been kind of a fun thing to play on.
That would
And
have been
ultimately,
fun.
like the fight scenes with all the paranormals, it's mostly just Thomas and invulnerable Tyrone. And the fight scenes are both kind of like Adam West Batman-y, just like punch, another punch, bam. And also still kind of disappointing. Like there's so many opportunities for like fan friendly, let's see how these two paranormals match up. Like even like if they could have just shown us like the Thomas and Jeff Walters fight, or what happens when.
Antibody meets Tyrone. Yeah,
Right.
there's all kinds of weird combos. Okay.
Maybe Lindsay could have taken out flying hubcap man, right?
Oh, right. Like some
He's not,
unexpected thing.
right? He's not particularly scary. But yeah, it was just a little, that part was a little disappointing, coupled with some of the weirdness. Yeah. It was a little, felt like a step down.
Fair enough.
The setup was pretty good, like cutting, we're getting somewhere with the whole Siberian thing, learning a little bit about like the Russian super team was kind of cool. I guess they'll be replacing the Medusa web probably as the next up and coming fight, if I had to guess.
I mean, it makes sense that, Russia wouldn't just have a guy, it would have a whole team. Yeah, so interesting. They were mentioned that they had been testing them out in Afghanistan, and so we'd seen Rostov single-handedly doing some work there a couple issues back, and so this is building towards whatever this war we see on the horizon, perhaps.
Yeah, it's funny. There's like that scene in Braveheart where it's like Mel Gibson and like the Scots are like running towards, like they're gonna throw down and fight with like the Irish group, and then they kind of like meet in the middle and shake hands and like, ah, it's like maybe that'll happen here. It's like the Russians don't really want to fight for Russia. They're all being kind of forced into it, and all these paranormals just got drafted and, forced to fight as well. And you're like, maybe we have a little something in common.
Perhaps, comrade, the paranormals can rise as the masters of the world.
I
And
don't know. Overall, would you say this issue was Nukin or the Pits?
pits. Yeah, just say it's either one, but
It's the binary choice that makes it tough, though,
it is. I will give it a B minus.
Yeah.
That the pits, I don't.
I don't know. B is above average, so
Okay.
yeah, I was kind of thinking B minus C plus. If pushed, I would say the pits. That sounds too harsh, like for what it was, but if I had to pick one, the pits.
I mean, for me, it's, I don't know. It's like average to slightly below. I didn't actively dislike it, but there's a flaw or two. And yeah, just in comparison to what we've been getting, it feels like okay.
There's always something, it's like justice is lagging a little bit, and then we have a solid issue that's kind of fun. Cy Force was flying high, and then you had a little bit of a downer one. Consistency. Nope, it can't all be DP7, I guess.
It cannot.
Well, I guess
Well,
Starbrand is consistently bad.
he's like consistently giving up hope on Starbrand. Moving back to the backup pages, we've got a number of official handbook pages. First
Yeah.
off, Thomas Boyd.
Thomas Fitzpatrick Boyd.
What? Yeah. The other illustrator, Siphon, Psystalker. Were there even more? I forget.
I don't think so.
He's single, Protestant, non-practicing, mobile. They kind of used the pseudo-scientific explanation for his powers that we got a few issues back. Possesses triggers secreting an enzyme from his pores, which enters the target organism. This enzyme is then psionically activated by.
I particularly like peculiarities. Boyd has a prevalence for violence. He's not above killing an opponent if the situation warrants it.
Not sure. Has he killed anyone? I mean.
That's a good question. I don't think so.
It was, I don't know, like in the annual when he was being chased by the assassins, maybe, but he's not like shown a proclivity for violence beyond, you know. But anyway, I mean, they were kind of yelling at him when he joined Psi-Force a lot. Boyd, you're just bringing us down to their level. I get results.
Was a little surprised Andrew Chaser got his own a whole complete entry on here, because I mean he just kind of shows up a little bit here and there.
You know, it's I remember the who's who that now that you could think you remind me of it, and at least one iteration of it like broke things down into like hero, villain, supporting character or something like that.
Yeah.
So I mean it's nice to see a supporting character get a shout out, but so far, yeah, he hasn't really been like on. He hasn't had more than like a half dozen pages, I'm gonna say.
Yeah.
So it's a little I'm expecting like him to be more, you know, influential in the upcoming issues.
Yeah, I guess Nisieza probably just really likes the character or something. Like, we got all this like backstory, like the titles of the books that he published and stuff. It's like,
I mean, I can't tell if
wrote
he's sort of like an idealized like
a lot.
journalist, or this is like Fabian's, you know, what I wish I'd done with my journalism degree or something. I don't know. Yeah, he's got like he's this sort of award-winning muckraking journalist you'd see in movies from the 70s.
Yeah,
It's like,
definitely
oh,
does not
I'm gonna
exist.
expose the secrets. And then I'll turn over the evidence to New York Times, and then the whole government will have to re deal. And it's like, oh, you do know who controls the New York Times, don't you? Okay. Or is it that the New York Times controls the CIA? It's one or the other. I
That would
can
be a
never
fun plot
remember.
twist. It's actually the journalists running everything.
So he's got like a book on the Libyan air raid, which was early 80s. The plight of the homeless in America. Wow. And toilet seats for $100, a study of Pentagon spending under the Reagan administration. Boy, times have changed. Anyway. We would never spend a lot of money on the Pentagon now. That'd be crazy.
Hey, five sides to the building, five times the prices. That's the rule. You can't do nothing about it.
So we yeah, he's whatever, an amusement diversion. But then, like, as back to like core team member, we have Lindsay Fallon. And yeah, she's 17,
Former
I want to
student,
say.
former hotel employee.
So she was in 1988, she would have still been 17, I think. She is Catholic, non-practicing, and 5'2", 96 pounds, blue green eyes and blonde hair. Yeah, I
Tiny.
shouldn't be surprised if Wayne is so taken with her. I don't
Go figure.
know. She is also I always like think she's Canadian because they immediately went to Canada, but she's from Seattle, the Washington area. So,
Yeah,
and then a little
almost
bit
like
more,
being Canadian.
it's yeah, the next best thing. A little bit more about how her power works. Psychic imprints on inanimate objects. It little, I guess it's got a pseudoscientific explanation, but
Still
oh,
doesn't
she's
really
the
explain it, and also kind of like once she is focused and locked onto their past emanation. So, like, again, no real mention of like future reading or anything. So,
is a skilled computer operator, but she is not very athletic or well coordinated.
yeah.
That's kind of refreshing, honestly. I mean, not every comic book character should be able to do the gymnastic whatever.
Right.
I mean,
They're all bodybuilding monsters.
exactly.
And then we got Potiphar, interestingly enough, which I think this was a question before, but he does not actually have paranormal powers. So this is like a mercenary, an Egyptian punisher, I guess.
Okay.
Right.
So he's just, yeah, very well armed, hand-to-hand combat as well.
Got some of those like 90s bullet pouches kind of things going on with him.
He's definitely, he looks like Judge Dredd at the bottom there with his helmet on, yeah.
Definitely does. Yeah, definitely looks like a G.I. Joe character or something. Would have been cool to see him go toe to toe with Mark Hazard, just saying.
Oh, he's a religion is Islam. Oh, okay.
Has fluid command over all weapons of war and combat techniques. All combat techniques, really?
Yes.
Don't try and thumb wrestle this guy.
The
He likes to listen to rock and roll music through his helmet stereo while performing a combat duty. That's such a weird way of putting it, while performing a combat duty. Whether this is
is
to obscure audio commands from Medusa Web field leader Babel or simply a personal preference is not yet known.
okay. I
That's a
guess
big secret.
we'll see more of Potiphar, I'm guessing.
He has an extremely sociopathic personality and therefore a strong disregard for human life.
I mean, thinking back on the fight in San Diego, I mean, I mean, he was the only one who was literally shooting a teenage girl. I mean, the
Yes.
others were kind of chasing them and stuff. So, yeah, I don't know. Maybe he's the bad side of Medusa Webb. So, anyway, speaking of bad side, we finish up with Rodstvo. Rodstvo. Real name, John Rodstvo. Oh, he was a narcotics agent for the KGB who then was, no, I'm kidding.
Trapped in a dream
Trapped
world.
in a dream world. No, he's Kinship is what the translation of that name is. A lot of unknowns, basically. They say he's a hero of the Soviet Union. Religion, Russian Orthodox, of course. Affiliated with the Siberian Project. 6'4". He's a big dude. And the weird, like, whatever he looks like is they say, this energy is more than his physical body can stand. So he lost parts of himself because of this energy, and the exposed area is now contained in a plastic alloy developed by the Soviet space program. So he's kind of got like half encased in something to kind of keep him together.
Yeah.
So I don't know, he's always kind of exploding, so I'm not sure if he's holding together all that well. Okay.
Yeah. That was like the but yeah, it's a lot of information on him. It's whether Rostov can survive the loss of his physical form is not yet known. It seems to be a goal he's striving for, but choosing to be used by the Soviet military in situations which would necessitate vast expenditures of energy and further depletion of his physical form. It has been seen that extreme uses of his powers cause severe stress on Rostov, and then he needs to take a nap. But yeah, it's like he's trying to burn away what's left of his human body, apparently.
To take a nap. He's just like me.
Yeah, in the picture, I think he's actually lost more of his parts than he has in the current book, too. So
Interesting.
definitely weird.
Yeah, it's a little more out there. So we'll leave those official handbook entries in our collection, or add them to our collection, I should say. And then we have Letters to Psi-Force. We get a welcome to our new penciler, Graham Nolan, and they say he'll be back in 20 issue 25, but in the meantime, a little Marvel tryout winner, Mark Bagley, will do the next issue. They do not mention that he did Night Mask before.
They probably forgot. Well, it's
So
good to have Bagley back.
okay, no complaints there.
Yeah. Then they complain a little bit about not getting enough letters.
They speaking of the official handbook pages, Wayne's page had gotten his birth date wrong. It was six should be 1969, not 68. And under religion, it should have read practicing Catholic, because you showed him in a church taking confession
Yeah, easy mistake to make.
2 issues ago. Okay. And then yeah, not too surprising, we have a shout out to the comics shop owner in Victoria, British Columbia, for her helpful hand getting us reference material for issues 20 and 21. So,
Yeah, nice job, Patty.
way to go.
If you're still around,
I think that shop's still there, or
I think we've
is it?
saw, decided that it had closed in the last couple of years.
Oh, okay. I do remember looking it up when the during those issues and
Right.
promptly put it right back out of my head.
Not a very important piece of trivia.
So we've got some interesting so mail. I didn't really it wasn't actually that interesting a letter, but the first one, TM Maple, was a famous letter hack who would like he had like a letter published in every comic book up through I don't know when.
Did not
I
know
do
that.
remember that dude. Yeah. Or maybe it was like a collection of people all trying to like write under that name and get their letters published. I forget what the story was now, but there's a the let's see, someone asking, where's Psyhawk? We haven't seen him since the annual and before that, issue 10. How did
Yeah, good
everyone's
question. These are the questions I wanted answered.
we did. This
Why
is
don't why do we just not maybe just don't bother summoning our ultimately powerful entity that's quite useful?
this Aaron Curtis or Andy Roback that wrote
Yeah.
this letter. Nuke me with the new. So let's see. He so but in answer to some of your questions, we have special one-shot graphic albums coming out every few months. The first was The Pit, followed by The Draft, which is on sale even as you read this. You'll soon see the third special edition called The War, which should give you an idea of what it's about. Your other questions were answered, and Psyhawk, wait till issue 25. So we've got more sort of confirmation that the war, rather than intended to be a conclusion of the new universe, was meant as just like an a series, one of a series of ongoing graphic novels. So set your expectations accordingly.
Indeed. Indeed. But yeah, interesting though, like they're giving us a peek that Psyhawk will be back in 25. So not next issue, but it's coming.
He'll be back once we start killing some people.
Fair
People be
enough.
dying, and then Psyhawk will be back.
Somebody suggested to them that they should use the letters column name sidelines, like PSI, Psyforce
You.
sidelines. Yeah, no good. That's the
It's.
pits.
I don't know.
And probably the
Signs of the
anti-Reagan one
times?
is the most interesting one, right?
Yeah, the last one. Let me see. This is actually he kind of jumps all over the issue which printed the text of the draft announcement from Reagan's State of the Union address. And Chaser had like a little note in there, like, oh, just round up the paranormals. Here we go again, And yeah, a guy takes it to heart. I find him, according to Chaser, the president's plan to reinstate the draft is a pack of bull. Right. Let me put it like this. The general, well, anyway, he had started off by calling the general. I know about the general anti-Reagan bias rampant in the comics community. The example of it in Psyforce 19 was particularly galling. So he's okay. So as he goes on to develop the idea that, like, it's realistic that you would reinstate the draft under these conditions or whatever. But like calling attention to like. To Reagan as the guy doing that. Is this the new universe Reagan who was exploded and then was shown to have paranormal powers?
Yeah,
I
secret
guess.
Reagan.
So what's their response to that? First of all, since when is there a rampant anti-Reagan attitude in the comics industry, much less an anti-anything attitude? When a writer is working, she bases her he or she bases reactions to most events from a character's point of view. Sometimes the character shares the writer's viewpoints, sometimes they don't. And to say it, the character's opinion reflects the writer, editor, company, or industry is not quite accurate. Say that the many of the characters in the book reflect an anti-Reagan attitude to be more correct. And as they say, they go on, these are teenagers. And yeah, I can tell you, teenagers in the 80s weren't like gung-ho Reagan
Right.
folks. I've never seen like high school students like, yay, the president. I'm not sure. Yeah. So yeah, probably since JFK, it's been like this. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, that wasn't the most whatever anti-Reagan thing I've ever seen,
Yeah,
but
it definitely didn't stand out to me reading it as like being particularly political,
so but it is a
yeah.
little funny, like we said, putting ourselves back into the 80s when these were written. Cold War still on, Iron Curtain still up. I mean, it's changing a lot in just the next year. I'm not even
Yeah.
sure, like, if I look to see where these books end versus when the fall of the Soviet Union, what the timeline is. But I mean, this stuff, people are pretty sensitive about some of it in some ways. But I was just reading a blog this weekend or this week about some Eclipse books. Eclipse was a publisher in the mid 80s. And yeah, that the blogger picked out a lot of letters and things, and one of them was also complaining about the extreme right wing bias of their I think it was Airboy, which
Okay.
okay, yeah, and the blogger didn't care much for that. This fascist attitude has always been with us, and blah blah blah. I mean, I would say that it sometimes seems a bit whatever, but I think people were generally aware that a lot of writers had sort of a generally leftist worldview, let's call
Yeah, I
it.
mean,
It's common
if you're like a
in
college literature
entertainment and
major, or if you're into writing and that kind of stuff, yeah, it's probably going to be
yeah.
more left, but.
But there was a thing that books at the time were more, as they say here, like the characters would say this, but we're not, we're careful not to be like over the top with our own opinions. And so they made efforts to either kind of balance things out, like in this Airboy book. They would be fighting in South America, but then they'd be in Afghanistan or something fighting the Soviets. And so it'd be like, you try to be realistic, but then you end up sort of with one political side or another just because of how the geopolitical game is. I would say that, like, back then, I mean, I don't know if like these guys were a little, super sensitive, or they just sort of could see the writing on the wall a lot further ahead. But like as I say, the books back then, the writers, they had their own politics, but you didn't feel beat over the head with them.
Yes, very true.
Telling a good story was number one, and if you got like a little joke about Reagan every now and then, it wasn't anything people couldn't, brush off and move past and be like, yeah, whatever. So, yeah, it's funny to see that, yeah, this these sort of people have, yeah, will get these letters even back then, far before the internet took hold. So
Yeah, I
it's
think
not just.
though my favorite end of comics piece that I had found in the last couple of years is like it was a Marvel book around the era. I forget, but in one of their, profiles where they ask the guys questions and it's like, who are your idols or who do you look up to the most or something? And somebody mentioned both Donald Trump and Senator Joe Biden in the same like line. Like these are the two people I look up to. It's like, It's like that is an interesting historic take.
It is. It was also. I love. I'll finish up my digression into Airboy with, mentioning the writer of the book at that time, the like accused of being a communist, Chuck Dixon.
Okay,
They
known
sent.
communist Chuck Dixon.
Canceled for being too right wing, Chuck Dixon was at the time accused of being this, that, and the other. And he's like, I try to, keep my thoughts to myself. And so if you think I'm this or that, I'm just, I guess I just, mission accomplished. So who knows? Anyway, I think we've got enough time in the later books this month to look at the Universe News, which has a couple of interesting points, but
Yeah, I want to talk about Reagan for another 20 minutes.
not Cyphor specific ones, which are all I'm going to talk about.
Nice.
Although I will talk about Reagan for another 20 minutes. Well, I mean, these guys all seem, it all seems like so long ago now, and yet as we also see so many parallels to today's world, it's funny.
It's almost like we never changed that much, except for the
Yeah,
fashion.
it's true. If I went out in like blazing 80s hairstyles and big shoulder, yeah.
In Pittsburgh, not so much. In LA, Miami, people wouldn't look twice.
Well, I guess that is it for this week's episode. Next time, the new now universe. I will stop doing that soon.
Thanks.
Checks in on our displaced paranormals, plus a cast of thousands, DP7 number 23.
Can't possibly have more characters than this issue, can? We'll find out. So yeah, DP7 number 23, the conclusion of the searing tale begun in Psi-Force 23, and it's a shocker. It's like I thought it already concluded, but okay, we'll see. The battle between Psi-Force and DP7 reaches a fever pitch at the Fort Benning training base. Again, I thought it was over. But with everyone's attention focused on the all-out battle between these two paranormal forces, no one notices the horrifying change in Jenny Swenson caused by overexposure to pit juice. Oh, boy.
Is
Like,
she's
oh.
like starting to melt and eat other people?
She's going to have like the little. Like Quato from Total Recall, the little guy under her shirt. Ugh. Now I'm officially worried. Convergence, written by Mark Gruenwald, penciled by Paul Ryan, inked by Danny Bolinati. I mean, Gruenwald, you haven't let us down. Don't turn Jenny Swenson into that weird blob of people from that other backup story, all
So
right?
yeah, we've got on sale this month, and so we see the cover from DP7 next week, and it is another Paul Ryan, and it's kind of the same as this week's Psi-Force cover,
Yeah, it's
but
just
we're
another angle of the dance battle.
yeah, but this week was Boot Camp Brawl, and next week is. Got it. Boot
Well,
Camp
boot camp
Battleground.
battleground. Yeah, I'm sorry. Were you setting me up for that
Uh,
one and I failed?
uh, we need to like make more like hand motions or something.
Yeah.
So we'll see if things heat up after Tyrone and Wayne have driven off into the distance. Once again, you can find us at our website, kickersinc.com, or you can email us at newuniversepodcast@gmail.com. This has been the voice of the new universe, and we will see you back at the spinner rack.
It's your universe, idiot.
It was only supposed to make a buzzing noise.
Good luck, kids.